Welcome to this week's episode of Jackson's American Tales, ordinary people with extraordinary life stories. This week, we're sitting down to talk to a local man named BJ Breacher, who when you hear his story, you're going to be exhausted. This guy is a go-getter, but we're going to find out what do you do when even though you're a go-getter who's living a lot of his dreams, you find your life isn't giving you the satisfaction that you need, and you need to make a change when you're about 30 years old or older. BJ Breacher has an amazing story. You're going to love this episode. So enjoy this episode of Jackson's American Tales. Joined right now by a guy that is probably no stranger to a gym, looking at this tight t-shirt that he's got on.
What?
He is no stranger to running into danger. We're going to find out how you become a fireman and why somebody decides to do that and put their life on the line. Joined by BJ Breacher. How you doing?
Good. I've got a lot to live up to now that you've kind of built that up. So,
well, you're a fit fellow, which you want to see that in a fireman. You don't want someone like me who spends a lot of time eating hot dogs and ramen noodles running out of breath as I run inside that fire.
it helps. I'll put it that way. It helps. All right.
Where are you from?
I tell everybody that I was born in Green Bay, but raised in Crivets.
Okay. Is Crivets, where's Crivets at?
Crivets is the southwest corner of Marinette County.
Okay.
So it's probably about an hour and a half north of Green Bay.
So were you born at Lambeau?
No, I wasn't born at Lambeau.
I don't know, like there's a tailgate going on.
Exactly.
Or something.
We all have to be checked in there before we're, considered citizens of Green Bay. Yeah. We have to be baptized at Lambeau Field.
Yeah. So. Baptized a little bit of Miller Lite on
there. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Okay, so what size of town is Cryptic?
Crivets.
Crivets. What size?
Let me put it this way. It's a graduating class of 80. 80. So it was small, certainly not tiny. And with that in mind, I mean, I didn't even live in town. I lived about 20 minutes outside of town.
Oh.
So I was back in the sticks, actually. So we'd get on the bus every morning and you'd head into town and do schooling and then get bused back home. So,
did you grow up on a farm? Did your parents
farm? No. A lot of people think that, like, I had friends that I went to college with that actually thought like I got up in the morning and fed chickens and lived in a tar paper shack.
Friends that had to do that.
And I had a friend who came home. If you're familiar with the Crivets area, you might be familiar with the annual hog wrestling that they do up there. Hog wrestling. Yes.
I'm going to guess that is what it sounds like.
It is what it sounds like.
Have you wrestled some hogs?
I have.
Okay. I have. Tussle some pigs?
I have. but I had a friend from college that wanted to come home, and he was floored. He goes, dude, I thought you actually did live in a tar paper shack. I'm like, no. It's a house back in the woods, and I might be a little backwoodsy from time to time, but no. We have all of our teeth, and so.
But you are a country boy.
Yeah, it would be safe to say that. Yeah.
What did your parents do when you were growing up?
Well, like I say, when I was born in Green Bay. My father worked at a paper mill in town, and my mom was a stay-at-home mom for a while. Then she did some administrative work, and at some point, about fifth grade, my parents had this idea of moving up to the Crivets area. So for the longest time, my dad drove back and forth, and my mom did waitress work for my grandparents. And one day, my uncle came to my parents and said, hey, I got this idea. And my mother's side of the family are all business owners. So they're in hospitality with resorts, restaurants, things like that. So, but my true story, my uncle came up with this idea. He was taking a shower one day. He's like, I want to start a restaurant, and came to my mom and dad. And lo and behold, they opened up what's called Sportsman's Cafe.
Okay.
The interesting niche about that particular restaurant is that nobody served breakfast up in that area.
Oh.
So my uncle, being the savvy businessman that he is, decided to use that as a niche. And they took a little tiny snowmobile repair shop. And after the first year of business, they're like, we have to add on because we're just getting overwhelmed. So that being said, the oldest of three kids, I was forced to start washing dishes.
Free labor, right there.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
So there were many days where I didn't feel like working, and my days off that I was told, my boss would call first and go, hey, you want to work today? Nope. And then the phone would ring again, and dad would call and say, you're working, I'm coming to get you. All right. So
So your dad quit. Did he quit the paper mill and start doing this?
Yeah, exactly. That's what happened. My dad was driving back and forth from Krivitz, and they decided to get into the world of business and tourism and things like that. And they did that for about, I would have to say about 10 to 15 years. And then at that point, my parents, my sister was just getting ready to finish her senior year in high school. And my parents were like, okay, we're done. And they sold their half out of their interest. And they just kind of took a year to coast on things and just live off that. And then they decided to move back down to Green Bay. And my dad got back into doing what he really likes to do. He likes to work with his hands. He likes to build stuff. And he likes to do that type of labor. So he went from being a business owner to installing cabinets and doing things like that. And my mom opened a coffee shop.
So he didn't get back into the paper mill business.
No, he did not. I remember having a conversation with him one day. And I'm like, so you go back to, I think it's Fort James now. I'm like, you ever going to go back to that? He's like, no. So, fair enough.
So for someone who doesn't know, my grandmother lives in Mosinee, and there's a paper mill up there. And for those who don't know and have never been around a paper mill, it's got an odor. Did dad bring that smell? I worked in a donut factory. Kid you not, I made donuts, and I would come home and smell like sugar and bread. Did dad come home and smell like sulfur?
I can't remember that, but I will say this. Owning a restaurant, mom and dad and myself would come home smelling like French fries.
There's nothing wrong with that.
No, that's not. I have shoes that were wrecked from just standing, in that type of environment. Greasy and mopping and all that. But if you've ever driven through Kaukauna, driving up to Green Bay, there's that particular smell that comes through. But there is a sulfur smell that's there that's synonymous with
certainly. Yeah. Speaking of, the shoes being ruined, people also may not realize this. I think some of America's greatest ice skaters came from working by a fryolator. The ground would be so greasy, you could pirouette your way all the way through any fast food kitchen.
Yep. And then, of course, if you're washing dishes in the corner, you get that water on top of it. Ooh.
So what kind of kid were you growing up?
Like a lot of kids, I was involved in sports and stuff like that. Had passion, loved playing football. Baseball was all right, but I love farting around in the woods.
Okay.
I mean, I was...
Were you a hunter?
Yeah.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I think there was a couple of times that I traipsed off in the woods with a gun. I never got anything, thank God, and did catch some hell when I got home. Hey, you're not supposed to be doing that. I didn't do anything, but...
Yeah.
I spent a lot of time just messing around in the woods, fishing and hunting and just looking at things and pretending to hunt when I couldn't and stuff like that. Moving up to Krivitz, there was so much public land over there. At that time.
I don't hunt. And I don't know. I always get confused about the public land versus private land. Mm-hmm. Public land, you're allowed to just go out on and walk around and shoot stuff?
Yeah. Well, within reason, of course. Obviously, you've got to play by the rules of the
game. Yeah, you can't just go shoot a bear in the middle of June.
Right. But, the Department of Natural Resources and the state has done a real good job of allocating lands and all that to folks. As a matter of fact, I did a big ton of research on it one day just for giggles. The state of Wisconsin has more public land available than any state in the United States. Example, during season, I can go to a public piece of land and I can hunt. Within rules, whenever I want to.
Okay.
Within, you can only hunt so long during the day. And
yes.
But in a place like, say, Missouri or something like that, if I want to hunt on public land, they have basically our raffles. So you show up there and you're like, okay, and they draw your name and your number. And like, okay, you guys can hunt from this blind today. And if your name isn't drawn, we got to go to another next drawing and see if we can get there. So we have a lot of freedoms in here as far as public land access, not just for hunters, but fisher and outdoorsmen.
So is that why Illinois is always coming up here to hunt our deer? Because I see a lot of them flooding up here. I know that's what they're doing.
You know what? We do get a lot of tourism, but I'll give credit where credit's due. I've seen some pretty big whitetails. I used to live down in Broadhead. I've seen some pretty big whitetails just outside of Rockford.
Oh, okay. Oh, so yeah. They got their own down there.
Northern
then.
Illinois has some very large white tails. So I don't know what they're doing coming up here.
Yeah. So you look like a pretty fit guy. Were you an athletic kid? Did you do good in sports?
I played football.
What position?
I ran track. I was a running back and a defensive back.
Oh, hot dang.
And then
some contact in there.
Yeah, there was. I played college football at St. Norbert College for
really?
4 years. Yep. And got the opportunity to play 1 year of Arena League football in the Professional Indoor Football League. So,
are you kidding me?
No.
Who'd you play for?
Played for the Green Bay Bombers.
That's cool.
Yeah, it was one of those things that I have to say, and I'm not going to toot my horn.
Toot your horn.
But I got an opportunity to do some fun things in my life, and that was one of those things. And it just kind of fell into my lap. They were doing open tryouts. So I went, and I did well enough to make the team that day. So
kind of a Vince Papale story.
Sure, exactly. Yep.
That's really cool. Mm-hmm. So were you a good student?
I will say that I was a C student. I had my things I was really strong in, and there were some things that I struggled in. There were some things I'm just like, yeah, like a lot of kids. I always felt that I was, you know, pretty good in reading and English, and yeah, probably could have been better at science. I'm at least more interested in sciences now than I am than I was back then.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I was a C student.
Okay. What did you want to be when you were a kid?
You know what? I got to be honest with you. I didn't exactly know what I wanted to. You know, I will say this. I mean, my sophomore, junior, and even into my senior year, I started thinking a lot about getting into law enforcement. Started planning for doing stuff like that, and I got my associate's degree in police science and protective services, and that never quite came together like I thought. But in retrospect, at that time, I mean, I graduated from a technical college at the age of 20 and pretty much felt like I probably wouldn't get hired yet. So I went on to get my bachelor's and all that. So used that time to kind of, I guess, grow up a little bit and add to my resume and all that. And things just kind of took a turn from there. So
I'm guessing since you were desiring or looking into getting into law enforcement of some type, you weren't really the troublemaking kid?
I have to say, I mean, I kept my nose out of trouble because I had parents that kept me busy.
There it is right there.
I was in athletics, so being able to stay on the football team or run track, it was very important to me. I lived for it as a kid. My brother and I would sit and we would videotape VHS tapes, of course, back in the day.
Beacon Rewind.
Yep, exactly. We would videotape inside the NFL and all these highlights, you know, and all that. We'd watch them over and over again. And even to this day, we send texts back to each other like, hey, remember this? You know, and jokes. But we'd sit and watch it over and over. And that meant so much to me to be able to do that. It's kind of hard to hunt and fish when you're in trouble, you know, or you're hungover.
Yeah.
And you don't want to go to work and have to deal with your parents, too, because, like I tell everybody, I got a double dose because not only was I at home with my parents, but I was at work with them, too. So.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but to be fair, you know, I mean, I'm very happy that I was kept busy.
How many siblings do you have?
I have two.
Two?
I have my older brother, Bill. He's married and lives in Florida. He's a superintendent of a PGA golf course. And my sister is a nurse. She lives up in De Pere, which is outside the Green Bay, with my brother-in-law, Jason, and my niece and nephew.
Beautiful. Did everybody get along, or was there some tussling happening?
You know, my mom always tells a story of how, okay, I was the oldest, and I got my middle brother, and then I've got my sister. Well, usually when my sister came along, my sister and my brother would get in a fight, and I was the one that protected my sister and beat up my brother. So it's kind of how that all came together. But, you know, just like any kids, we had our tussles and our disagreements and all that, so.
So then after school or after high school, you went into college, you said, for a little while?
Yep, I did the technical college.
What technical college did you go to?
I went to NWTC in Green Bay.
In Green Bay. Okay, yep. So kind of staying close
to
home?
Yeah, I still had a lot of friends in the area, and there were some guys that were friends of mine that had moved down there to go to school, too. And you know, my SAT scores didn't necessarily lend myself going to Harvard, let's put it that way. So, and
me either.
Yeah, exactly. But it was part of me growing up, and you know, looking back, you know, I met some good people, had some fun, have a complete respect for law enforcement, what they have to deal with, and have a insight as to how they would do things.
So then after that, you went to St. Norbert, you said?
Yeah, exactly. You know, I graduated, like I said before, I'm like, it's probably going to be a while before anybody takes me seriously. And to be perfectly honest, I still wanted to play some sports.
Oh, yeah. You only got so much time in your life to be able to do that
exactly. stuff. So I had the opportunity to do that, and I looked at a couple other schools. And because of my lackluster ACT score and all that and some things that I lacked to get in, mm-hmm. there was a number of schools that said, well, you have to go do this and this. So you know, like anything in life, if you want it bad enough, you've got to put the time in. So I took some classes during the summer, and it was a math class. And I will never say that I'm strong at math, but I've been pretty good at algebra. And lo and behold, they said, you need to take an algebra class. And I said, I can add letters. Okay. and knocked it out of the park. And lo and behold, I found myself at St. Albert College pursuing an associate's degree in sociology. So
now in high school, I'm going to go back to football for a minute here. You said you played halfback and defensive back in high school. Yep. What were you playing in college?
Playing in college, I played defensive back.
Okay.
You know, when you get to a higher level of athletics, you know, regardless of whether it's a scholarship level or Division III or whatever, you know, they start taking people and you specialize in certain things.
Yeah.
So... You know, being a medium-sized, fast kid, let's let him run around in the backfield for a little bit. So
yeah, you got to be certain size to be a tight end.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and you got to be a certain size to mm-hmm. be a halfback to take all that damage.
Exactly.
So yeah, so mm-hmm. that's okay. Yeah. How did you perform? Do you think you were pretty good?
I think I was all right. You know, I'll never say that I was all world. And all that, but I had my moments.
You shutting fools down?
I had my moments where I shut fools down. There were moments where I hit people and I said, somebody please come and help me because this isn't going to go very well if I have to be here any longer. And luckily, I had more friends on a team that were fast that were willing to come and help out. So, yeah.
So you did all four. You did 4 years at St. Norbert's and played football all four years. Did you ever have any injuries?
Yeah. I had a run there, like my senior year, I cracked a rib.
Ooh.
Which, you know, you just kind of walk it off. And one of the most bizarre things that ever happened to me, besides dislocating two fingers in one day.
That's talent.
Yeah. We were having a drill that day, and I hit my knee on the ground, whatever, didn't think anything of it. And you know, you get done with practice, and with a typical, if anybody is aware, you know, you got your... Yeah, it's been an athlete. You finish practice, you go get something to eat, and then you go on the rest of the day. So I'm sitting down at the kitchen table and decided to get up to get something to eat, and my knee hurt. And I'm like, you know, whatever, bumps, bruises, whatever.
Football player, exactly. I assume it's to be expected to be in pain a lot.
Right. So I get up and I walk over to the table, get something to eat, and I sit down, and, you know, we're kind of carrying on and talking, and we're all done to get done eating. I get my stuff together, and I get up and I start walking. I'm like, wow, my knee really hurts. So I lived off campus at that time, so I got my stuff on. I made the walk back home, and I'm like, you know, something's not right. But I'm like, oh, whatever. I just walk it off. So I sat down, and believe it or not, I went home and I started studying. Had some tests coming up, and it was a Thursday night, and I have a bunch of friends that were living in town. And of course, it's Thursday night drink specials.
Thirsty Thursday.
Come on, buddy.
Right.
So I'm like, well, I said, I tell you what, is my buddy Chris and my buddy Dave that still live up in Green Bay, love them to death. They're like, hey, man, we're going out. $5 all you can drink. Boomers, let's go. And I said, well, I got to finish, you know, my homework here, but I'll be down later on. I could use a drink, you know, I mean, help out with the knee.
Put some alcohol in his knee.
Exactly. So about 2 hours went by, and I got up. Boy, my knee was bothering me. Now I just walk it off. I'll go have a couple of drinks. Everything will be fine. So I'm out there at the bar in Green Bay and hanging out, and I'm like, man, my knee hurts. Something's bad wrong. You know, Chris, Dave, I got to go, man.
Oh, okay, so he got that bad.
Yeah. So I'm walking out to my truck, and I used to drive a little Mazda B2000 pickup truck. You know, that thing runs forever. I had like 15 billion miles on it when I sold it. But I'm going to get in, and I can't bend my knee.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, right away I'm thinking, I tear something and don't know what's going on? So I remember trying to get in the truck, and guy yells across, "Is you doing okay?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm fine." He goes, "Do you need a taxi?" I'm like, "No, I'm not that bad. I'm not drunk.
I'm injured. I'm not drunk.
I just want to go home."
Different issue.
So, and of course, it's a stick. So luckily, it was my right knee with my left, you know. But I'm driving home, and I start wondering, "Oh my God, what's going on?" So I got on the phone. And I called my coach. And I said, "Hey," I of course left him voicemail. He wasn't in the office yet. This is probably about 10:30 at night. "Coach, something's wrong with my knee. I need to talk to Russ," who's our trainer.
Okay.
I said, "I need to get in. I need to talk to somebody about this." And my knee was swollen. It was huge, and it was warm.
Ooh, that's okay. Neither of those are good signs.
Knowing what I know now, that is bad. So right away in the morning, I get up and I'm in pain. It hurts. I put, I didn't have an ice pack, but we had, of course, a number of we had a lot of ice, and we had some frozen drink items that were in there. So I used it as an ice pack, and I put that pack on my knee, and the knee was not getting cold.
Ooh, you know, boy.
So they asked me to come in. I come in, and they're looking at it, and we're going to get you in to see doctor right away. Long story short, I had a little cut on my knee. And they did a blood test. I had a staph infection in my knee.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So I'm like, what's the staph infection? And can I play this weekend? You know? And they took a look at it, and they go, well, we could drain it, but nothing's going to come out. It's just in the cellular, you know, tissue and all that. So, you know, they did x-rays to double check on things and made sure that wasn't a tear. They're like, yeah, you have staph infection in your knee. My kneecap at one time was probably the size of an orange.
Holy crap.
Yeah, it was scary. And then being told actually what was going on, they're like, yeah, you're lucky it didn't get into the joints or into the bone. Otherwise, bad things. I mean, they started talking about amputation.
Staph infection is no messing around. You bet.
So me being the guy that I am, I'm like, oh, no. Because the worst thing that could ever happen to me personally is never being able to run.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah, you're an active fella.
Yeah, so that being said, you know, they get me in there, they put me on antibiotics, and I show up in crutches, and they put me on a bunch of antibiotics. I got out of practice that night, and they're like, you're not playing tomorrow. It was like Thursday night that I came back, and the next day, Friday, we have our walkthroughs. And anybody who's played football knows, Friday, you know, kind of you go through the motions, you kind of check things out, everybody's got their, you know, T's crossed, I's dotted, okay. And I'm standing there in crutches. And they're like, yeah, you're not playing tomorrow. I'm like, let's hold off on that. You know, so I'm like stretching and all. The next morning I woke up, went through, got in the hot tub, and I said, I think I can go. And they're like,
what?
You sure? I'm like, yeah, I think I can go. You know, and I had to play because my grandpa was going to be there. Grandpa hadn't seen me play all year. So you're down at Lawrence University. Grandpa was going to be there, had to play. So I got out there, and it was a little tight at first. I spent a lot of time stretching, but I played.
Did you play? Did you feel like you performed?
I played well,
actually. Did you feel like you performed enough for Grandpa to be able to get a shot of what his boy's doing?
I got fumble recovery.
You're ball hawking it.
Well, a lot of guys got on my case like, you know, you could have picked that up and scored a touchdown. Right? And I'm like, I'm just jumping on it, man. My job is to get the ball to the offense. I'll let them do that. I don't want anybody on offense getting mad at me saying, hey, you're supposed to let us score.
I'm not a ball carrier either. Right.
So, but I played reasonably well in – the crazy thing about that, too, was we had a couple house parties. Let's see the knee, you know. And of course, you get kind of courageous when you're young. And I had all this fluid sitting on my knee. And let's say that me and buddies got together and I took a needle.
I don't like where this is going. I took
a lighter to it and tried to lance it. Everybody's standing around with, of course, as you can imagine, a crummy basement with, you know, red Solo cups in their hand with
how many beers liquor. Deep were you at this point?
I don't think beer had anything to do with what I was doing at that moment. I think probably and not necessarily Jack Daniels, because when you live on ramen noodles, you sure as hell is not going to buy Jack Daniels.
That's an expensive right. booze, so especially back in the day.
And you're not going to buy Captain. You're going to buy like Admiral, which is the knockoff version of it.
Yeah.
So
First mate.
Yeah, exactly. So, I'm working this needle into my knee, and everybody's like, oh, my God. And I was in there quite a bit, and I just stopped. And I was laughing. I'm like, I can't do this. It's not going in anymore. So I pulled it out, and I left well enough alone. Of course, woke up the next morning like, what did I do that for? Survive that. So, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So then everything healed up with the leg, and you were all good after that?
Healed up fine after that, and life goes on.
After you finished up with college at St. Norbert, what did you do after that?
You know, right away, you just take any job because all of a sudden you graduate, which is always a good thing.
How old were you when you graduated?
I graduated, I think it was 25, 26. Okay. But all of a sudden there's that moment where you graduate and you're like, oh my God, I'm unemployed. You know, so then you no longer, because I worked on campus, so you don't have that job anymore. And I got into retail and bounced around for a little bit and ended up doing social work for a while.
What kind of social work were you?
I was working with the kids in the Brown County area. They were the last step before going to Merrill, to Lincoln Hills.
Okay, it's like a juvenile correctional facility?
Exactly.
Gotcha.
I did intern for a little bit while I was at college at the Juvenile Detention Center in Green Bay. So, you know, having some of that, you know, on my resume enabled me to make that transition.
And you're still planning, you're still desiring to be a police officer at this time?
That was still out there.
Okay.
But, you know, I was still young and just living.
Okay. All right. Well, whatever happens, happens.
Yeah, exactly.
I can dig that.
But, you know, felt that because of the some of the things that I did in college, you know, with the football team doing community service, also, you know, with my internship, thought that maybe this was a niche for me. Wanted to work with kids, but didn't necessarily want to be a teacher.
Okay.
And also was in, you know, like to do some of the coaching and stuff like that. But, you know, worked with some of these kids that were having a hard time in school. Their home lives weren't exactly fantastic. And maybe their parents quite possibly needed a little help with some parenting skills, or, you know, you got bridge gaps every now and then.
That happens a lot. That happens a bit more often. People want to understand.
So, you know, started doing social work, working with those kids for about 3 years.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So then how did you get yourself into playing some arena football?
You know,
how old were you when you signed up for that?
I think it was like 28.
Oh, really? Yeah. So you're knocking on the door of 30. You've been out of college. You haven't played ball for a couple of years.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, actually, let me backtrack. I was probably closer to a year, year and a half out of college. And it was, you know, anybody who loves something as much as they do, you always would like to keep doing it, obviously.
Yeah.
And there was something in the newspaper about an expansion league step below the big arena league that everybody's aware of, coming to Green Bay. And then you open tryouts and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, oh, cool, I'll give that a shot, you know. And it's a faster game. The guys aren't necessarily huge like you would see in the NFL and Division I college and all that. So,
but they're still hitting, though.
Oh, yeah, that wall is not very forgiving.
You know, another thing, too, that I didn't really realize, my wife is a rugby player and is a big rugby fan.
Ooh, ruggers.
And, you know, ruggers are tough.
Mm-hmm.
But if rugby players were hitting each other as hard as football players or even college players, there would be deaths every day during a rugby match.
Yeah.
The pads that you wear as a football player allows you to turn your body into a weapon and use that at full speed against someone else who's charging at full speed on you too. So even if the guys aren't that big, them hits are.
Yeah. Speed, I've always told guys that I coach and guys I talk to, speed creates size. So you can be the smallest guy in the world, but if you get going about 20 yards and lay into a 300-pounder, you can size up with them.
If you disagree with that, check out. Look into Bob Sanders, who used to play for the
Colts.
Who used to play for the Indianapolis Colts. Big Bad Bob. I think was 5'6", and he hit like a dump truck.
You bet.
Yeah.
You bet.
Okay, so what position were you playing in the arena league?
I played
league?
Defensive back.
Okay.
You know, things are a little bit different in the arena league level. I mean, obviously, those people that watch football in the traditional sense, you know, it's 11-on-11. Well, this, you're scaling it down, where it's so basically...
How big is the field?
Field is, I think it's still the same size.
Okay, I didn't know if it was smaller from end zone to end zone.
No, if I remember correctly, it's still the same size. Basically, you're playing football on a hockey rink, which is a little bit bigger. They roll out the AstroTurf, they pad. There really is no out of bounds. So it's a combination of football.
What happens if you go over the wall?
I can tell you that when you do go over the wall, there isn't anything on the other side unless
you're then out of bounds.
You got
though,
fan.
Correct?
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, unless you got a fan that's going to catch you on the other side. Of course, first game that I played, or one of the first games I played, I went over, and it was not.
They didn't have the guys with the big pads?
No.
Because I've been to some arena games, and they've had the guys with the big pads on the other side. If you go over the wall, they smoke that guy,
I didn't know that was a thing. I didn't know that was a thing. I wish I would have known this.
That's been handy, huh?
Yeah. But, no, I mean, it's basically you got three linemen, and then a quarterback, a running back, and then you've got wide receivers. So it's a much faster paced game.
Yeah.
You can still run the ball, but you got to be, you got to have quick, fast guys, your offensive linemen. They got to be a little bit more nimble. Say an average score for in my opinion, for a regular traditional football game, like 21-14, average score for an arena league team might be, 56-44 or something
Okay,
like that.
Okay, yeah,
so
a bit more
points.
Yeah, a bit more faster action, a bit more high scoring on that.
Yeah, definitely.
So what does that pay? Does it pay? Does it pay?
It does pay. I got paid to play a sport that I love.
Did you get paid enough to that was the only thing that you were?
No, not at all. Okay. I can say that I probably pulled after tax about $200 a game.
Still.
So, hey, being a guy in his mid-20s.
Now, what happened? What if you got hurt? Do they cover you on that, or are you on your own?
True story. I did get injured. I dislocated my big toe hitting the wall.
Ouch.
We were playing the Madison Mad Dogs down here.
Oh, yeah.
And I was chasing a guy in the corner, and everything is focused on the ball, and kind of lost a sense of where that wall was. So I'm watching the ball, and the ball's going to go out of bounds. I look at the wall. And it was basically like walking up and just kicking the wall as hard as I could. And if you've ever been hurt to the point where you want to vomit, that's what that was.
So is that one of the worst? Is that one of the worst injuries you've had?
I'm going to say that's what it was.
Wow.
I hit it. I went down. I got up, and I thought I just stubbed my toe. Okay, whatever. And I start walking, and things weren't working right. So I take a knee, and another nice thing about my experience is I had a buddy who's a good friend of mine that I used to bounce with in Green Bay, Jason Helgenson. He was a trainer. So he comes running over. He's like, "What's the matter, Beej?" And I go, "I think I broke my toe." And he goes, "Well, just walk it off." I'm like, "I'm trying. It's not working." And you'll never realize the importance of certain digits on your body, and particularly your big toe, until you break it and can't use it.
Oh, no.
So I started hobbling over, and I wish I could have been a fly on the wall, and I was told that there was a picture taken, but I never got a hold of it. So they keep it's basically football in the hockey rink. They kept the hockey rink up. They kept the dugouts out there, too, or the boxes where the hockey players were. So I walk over, and they're like, "Have a seat on the bench." And, of course, I got the glass up, and all the little kids are hanging over the end, you know, looking, seeing what's going on. I mean, they're right on top of you. Thank God, you know, that the Madison fans were as nice to me as they were.
Yeah.
But
it's not like Philadelphia fans. Like, they'll boo Santa Claus and throw batteries at him.
Exactly. Nobody's throwing beer at me. So I'm laying down there, and they go, "Take your shoe off." And I go, "I can't. It hurts too bad." I'm like, "All right." So all the kids are hanging over, and if I understand correctly, they got the shoe off, and it was like, and I'm like, "I don't need to be looking at this." So, so they get the sock off. And they're like, "Okay, whatever." And they said, "You're done," which I'm like, "Yeah, I'm on board with that." So I went back, and they asked me, you know, if I wanted to go to the emergency room right now. I'm like, "I'm fine. You know, things are fine." I called my dad on the phone, and he's like, "So how'd things go?" And I said, "Yeah, it went good. We won, but I got hurt." "Well, what happened?" I said, "I dislocated my toe or broke it. I can't decide yet, but it hurts really bad." He goes, "You got two of them. Don't worry about it." Fair enough,
how
Dad.
How very dad-like.
Dad logic. Yeah. You know, so... you know, I got on board, and we're taking the bus ride home, and everyone's like, "Gonna be all right." I'm like, "Yeah, gonna be fine." Well, about halfway home,
you're not all right.
It hurt.
Ooh.
It hurt. So they decide that they're gonna take me to the emergency room at St. Vincent's. And another funny story. They're like, "You ever been to St. Vincent's before?" I go, "Oh yeah, I've been here before." "When?" January 12th, 1973. And they go, "Oh, you were born here." I'm like, "Yes, I was."
Coming back home.
Yeah. So they get me in there, and my buddy Jason's helping me out of the car, bangs my toe on the door. I probably had it coming somewhere along the line. They get me inside, get me up on the table. They do an x-ray, and like, "Okay, well, it's not broke, it's dislocated. You have a little tiny chunk of bone in there. There is a possibility that it might lock up one time. If it locks up, give us a call, we'll take care of you." You know, okay.
All right, we'll call a locksmith or whatever. Yeah, exactly. Did you do for that?
I'll just run down, yeah. So they go, "We're just going to put it back in." Fair enough. We'll give you something for the pain.
This don't sound good.
So I'm laying on the table, and they do what's called a block. So what they did is they take a needle. Well, they take a needle, and they inject on one side and the other side and the top, and they're like, "Okay," and they wait. So I'm standing around there with all these nurses, and this little doctor comes walking in. Swear to God, she's tiny. She's probably about 5'2". You know, she comes in and she goes, "All right, we ready to do this?" "Yeah, blah blah." So she gets up and she grabs my toe, and I howl. And she goes, "What's wrong?" And I go, "It's not set in yet." And they're like, "Okay, well, hold on." She leaves. She comes back 5 minutes later. She goes, "You ready?" "Yeah." "Still hurt." She goes, "Okay, well, let's wait another few minutes." She comes back in. She basically gets on and she starts going like this. I looked for a second. It was like she was trying to, it's like an old joystick.
From
Atari. She's turning on it like that, and it's not going in. And I'm howling. I'm trying to sit up, and all these nurses are holding me down. And she goes, "All right, do it again." So they did another block, and I actually watched my toe actually swell up. And they go, "We can't give you any more, because it's just going to start wrecking the cells in your toe, the tissue."
What's this block supposed to do?
It's basically just cutting off pain to your toe. It blocks off the pain to it, which I'm all about at this point.
Sure.
So I'm laying there, and of course, my buddy Jason, he's sitting in the room and he's laughing. He's
having a good time. That's what a good friend does.
I'm like, thanks, buddy. You're awesome.
Yeah. People don't understand. That's how you know you got a good friend, when he's howling laughing.
But I would probably be doing the same thing.
Absolutely.
So as I'm sitting there, you know, she comes back in, and this time she rolls up her sleeves, the doctor. She gets this little stool to stand on.
She's getting leverage
on you. I'm like, oh, it's getting real now. So I lay back there, and she starts wrenching on it, and it hurts. It hurts really bad. And all these nurses are holding me, and all of a sudden, pop, it went in, and it all went away.
Really? So just like that. Boom. Yep. Cracking a knuckle, and then the pain's gone.
Ooh, let me tell you. That was instant relief.
Wow.
And she's like, honest to God, she's like, all right, next. And she leaves the room. You know? I mean, she was all about business that day. So I was on crutches, maybe just for balance standpoint, for about a day or two. But after a while, I did some hobbling around.
Okay. Were you able to play the next week?
I did not play the next week.
Okay, take the next week off.
But played the following week.
Okay. So then what did you do after Arena League?
After that, I kind of putzed around for a little bit. Always been a fan of music.
Okay. And you're starting to get close to 30. You're starting to knock on the door 30, but 28-ish, 27, 28?
Yeah. Always loved music.
Do you play any instruments?
I play bass and I sing.
Oh.
Yeah. So
you know you get perfect pitch with a bass guitar?
How's that?
Throwing it into a dumpster without hitting any
of
the sides.
No.
Do you know how you get a bass? Do you know how to get a bass guitarist off your front porch?
Oh boy, where's this going? Because I know there are tons of bass player jokes out there, but no.
Take the pizza and tip him.
Well played. Well played.
So do you play a stand-up bass or do you play?
I play a guitar bass.
Okay,
for people out there that understand, traditional. I own my baby, which is a 2001 Warwick 5-string.
Oh.
It's a German bass. It's top rail.
Really?
It's foreign wood. It's gorgeous.
Nice.
It is.
So you got into doing some music?
Yeah. When I was in high school, me and some buddies farted around, you know, get in the basement and sound terrible.
But, yeah.
Rock.
Heck yeah.
Poison. Yeah. But kind of got back into it when I was, you know, done looking for something to do and, you know, was bad for a number of years. And then finally one day got together with some guys that we were all right, actually.
Do you pick or do you slap?
I do not use a pick. I use my fingers.
Oh, really? Yes,
exactly.
That's impressive. I always find the pick's cool, but the slap bass, you know, like flea.
Yeah.
Yeah, that I always found impressive.
I will always say that there's something to be said about if you ever hear a bass player and you're wondering how they get their tone, find out whether they play with a pick or their fingers first. Then when you figure that out, look at what they have for a setup. And if you can't replicate that tone, it's their hands.
Oh, okay.
I firmly believe that.
Got the good hands.
Yeah,
exactly.
And that's something you can't recreate.
So are you and your friends knocking out some bar gigs, or are you just having some fun?
Well, you know what? It started with a bunch of guys that got together, and we, members of the band came and went, and we played local bars and dives, and of course, you know, doing covers and stuff like that. And happened to just, you do anything long enough, you start meeting people, and you start, you know, finding. Brothers in arms, people that have the same taste, or at least you can tolerate.
Sure.
On the bus
ride. Yeah. That's
so
hard to find.
But got together with some guys, got better, got really good there for a while. I mean, I wouldn't say we were regional, but we opened for some nationals. We recorded an independent album.
Who's the biggest person you opened for?
Oh. Let me say that we opened for Pop Evil here in town.
Really?
Yes. And I was living down here, but the guys were still in Green Bay.
Okay.
We opened for Pop Evil. A lot of modern rock acts at that time.
Okay.
We played back-to-back shows with Jimmy Newquist from Caroline Spine.
Oh, yeah.
Which was fun. We opened for Days of the New.
So so you guys are doing some rock.
We played rock. That's what
rocking.
We did. Oh, yeah.
We
love to bring it. Had the opportunity to rub elbows with some neat people. I came down here with a friend and ended up having drinks and conversations with Brent Smith from Shinedown.
Oh, wow.
Which was kind of neat. He's one of my idols and all that, and a very down-to-earth guy. Actually struck up a friendship with their drummer. It was weird. We played Summerfest one year, And my girlfriend at the time was like, you want to go? They were doing a meet and greet.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I'm going to meet and greet. I know those guys. You know, let's go. Come on. So we're standing in line and we're getting the autographs. And the band had gone through some changes at that time. Mm-hmm. We were going along. And the drummer was like, dude, what's up? And everybody turns and looks at me. And I'm like, hey.
How cool is that feeling?
You got to admit,
that's yeah, pretty cool.
Yeah,
okay?
Yeah.
I've got a lot of friends that own, yeah, like, businesses and mm-hmm, restaurants. So mm-hmm, every once in a while the chef comes like, hey, yeah, what's up? And yeah, he ain't a rock star.
Yeah.
But I'm still like, that's pretty cool. Chef came out and said hi to me. Mm-hmm. It's just Applebee's I'm at.
Yeah.
No, Shinedown, they're good stuff, mm-hmm, and good people. They're good mm-hmm friends with our rock station, yeah, here, our sister station, mm-hmm, JJO. They do a lot of stuff with them.
Yeah.
So you're out there just doing some music.
Yeah.
At what point did you decide I need to get into fighting fires?
Well, it's kind of... At that time, you know, I was doing the music thing, but I was also working in an office job. And it actually was a luxury, actually, because I was making decent money working for an insurance company.
Mm.
Was doing well and was able to, you know, pay my bills, but also support my music habit. And the music habit also helped. We would break even.
Okay.
You know, every now and then we would go do a door gig. And for people who don't understand that, we would play a place in Marquette, Michigan, called Up Front and Company. And if you play a door gig, basically it's this. We're going to pay you, we have sound. We're going to pay you X number of dollars. And let's say it was like $300. If the door exceeds what we're guaranteeing you, you get the door.
Gotcha.
So anybody that knows that they're going to draw in a reasonable crowd is going to be like, well, heck yeah, let's do this, you know. But it was our first time playing there. So we're up there, and the neat thing about Upfront Company is they had their own PR department, and they would get out there, and we went in there, and we exceeded the door.
Oh, heck yeah.
Oh, and then we would do two shows.
We'd cool.
Do Friday night and a Saturday night. So we come back the next day, and we exceeded the door again. So we're like, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm going to go get tattoos today. I'm going to go buy. I'm like, dude, I am going to go buy some decent luggage because this bag that I'm hauling around my stuff in sucks.
Yeah.
You know? But, yeah, I mean, doing some of that stuff, it gets to be a grind. And I think anybody that does this long enough, and anyone that's been successful knows that you hit a wall every now and then. And you're just like, you know, this is not working. And when you're also in a setting like that, you meet a lot of interesting people. And my group of friends that I still love dearly to this day, and I check in on them every now and then, you know, see where they're playing, what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
They went on tour, you know, great for those guys. Love them to death. They're like brothers. But after a while, sometimes things rub on you the wrong way. And you're like, you know what? You see certain things and you're like, what you're doing is not right.
It's not the kind of environment that you want to be around.
Exactly. And, and as much as I love the guys in the band and they're just super great guys, I can't say anything bad about them. I got to a point where is there something else out there? Now, true story, I was doing the insurance thing, and I love telling this story. So I'm sitting there, and I'm taking phone calls and answering questions and blah, 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 and I got to take a break. So I reach over to put, you know, myself in idle mode. I'm not taking any phone calls.
Yeah.
And I sit back and I'm like, that's a pretty good call, actually. I handled that really well. And I'm like, you know, if I wasn't doing this, what would I be doing? And I'm like, well, I can't say music because that's what I'm doing right now. But what else would I be doing?
BJ's got a pretty amazing story, and it's going to get even better, which is why you're going to have to wait for part two of his story coming out next week on Jackson's American Tales. We're going to find out where his life journey has taken him. Hope you enjoyed this episode. If you do, please tell a friend, please share, click like, drop a comment, all that other good stuff, and join us again next week for Jackson's American Tales, where we will wrap up the saga of BJ Breacher.